city where the dust hangs high, far from a river where things grow green. The flowers weep and they lean away from the blood-stained soil beneath my feet. The thorns outnumber the petals on the rose, and the darkness amplifies the sound of printer's ink on propaganda page that will rule your life and fuel my rage. Ooh, ooh. I tried to bend my knees, but my knees were already bent. I haven't stood like a man for such.
That's Sananda Maitreya, formerly Terence Trent D'Arby, with one of my very favorite songs, As Yet Untitled. It's from his 1987 debut solo album, Introducing the Hard Line, according to Terence Trent D'Arby. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it indeed is a very sad day. The nation and much of the world mourning the loss of life in an extremely violent and hard to understand act by a lone gunman identified as Omar Martin, 29 years old, of Port St. Lucie, Florida, who, without warning, opened fire inside a popular gay nightclub in Orlando in the wee hours of Sunday morning as patrons were celebrating Pride Month. Mateen died in a gunfight with a SWAT team, but not before killing himself and 49 other patrons, being killed himself and killing 49 patrons and wounding 53 others, many of them critically. The massacre has shocked and outraged the nation and the world, and especially the LGBTQ community, which has been reporting an escalation of homophobia-related violence. The Orlando mass killings, however, as we'll discuss today, are a new threshold in such violence, which is occurring in a carefully orchestrated climate. And we will talk about that climate and how it is being used and manipulated so that we, all of us, are affected. It is just unspeakable. But as it happens, Orlando this past week was the site of much violence, much killing. We had the case of a young woman who was just in the prime of her life as a performer. And she was just performing in Orlando. She had come to a point in her life where her career was just taking off. And another assassin, leaving his home about 100 miles away and confronting her as she was greeting her fans and just saying hello, shoots her several times and she dies. After a while, you just can't you can't put your brain around these kinds of acts of violence. But you can't shy away either from the fact that this is not entirely unknown in our culture. This is not at all unusual. Perhaps the numbers are becoming more and more just staggering to us in our time. But Christina Grimmie had no reason really to think that her life would end this way. She was, after all, in the prime of her life. And she was just doing her thing, just trying to say hello to people who wanted to give her some of their energy back. And here comes this person out of nowhere and shoots her and kills himself. This makes no sense to us unless we look at the historical record and we see how consistent it is with a particular dimension of American culture. It is, in fact, violence of this type, violence of great magnitude, is very much a part of the American culture, the American psyche. This does not mean that we become immune to it and we say, oh, this is just part of the American culture. You can't help as a human being. You can't help but understand and feel affected by this kind, this level, this the enormity of tragedy on this scale. You can't be oblivious to it. You don't have to know the people in the club, but you understand how bizarre it all is, that they are doing their thing and enjoying life, or trying to enjoy life, and somebody leaves from 120 miles away and comes into their midst with one purpose and one purpose only, which is to annihilate as many people as possible, to cause this kind of impact. For what reasons, we don't know. We have all kinds of explanations. We're getting explanations that he was impressed by ISIS. He was the student of some other kind of radical Muslim. He hated gays. We're getting all kinds of reasons. But we will never really be able to understand why people do these things, because they're so completely outside our way of thinking. We can't comprehend these things. But we live in a society where people want answers, and so answers are given. Answers are formulated. And the horrible part of all of this, in the middle of all of this tragedy, we have enterprising souls who seek to use this kind of enormous tragedy for personal and political reasons. We're not encouraged to just stop and say no. We have to look at ourselves as a society, as a culture that breeds this kind of thinking and provides the mechanism for mass extermination of people. That is never part of the discussion. It is always something else. And we are encouraged to focus our attention elsewhere, but never on what we really need to be thinking about when these things happen, and thinking about it in a way that allows us to formulate some kind of approach that makes sense. Perhaps it is because we have no answers, or we believe we have no answers. Perhaps it is that we really don't care about the answers, because to find the answers and to discuss the answers will put us in yet another uncomfortable place. And for the purposes of politics and how we are seen on the world stage, we dare not raise these ghosts, because the finger that we choose to point outward at times like this, we necessarily have to point inward. Self-blame has never been part of the American approach to understanding what we have to do as a culture, as a society, to self-correct. A startling comparison, I thought I would share with you today, is in the behavior and the response and the tone of the response by none other than the President of the United States, Barack Obama. I want to share with you, and I want you to listen to how the head of state responded in the immediate aftermath, not only of the tragedy in Orlando, but just last year, the killing of 9 people in a South Carolina church. And we will talk about how these incidents, they are not supposed to cause inner reflection. They're not supposed to cause the United States to examine itself and ask the question, what is it, to what degree are we, the government, policies, to what degree are these things responsible? We will hear in his speeches, there are 2 that I would share with you, each addressing the calamities that occurred in South Carolina and in Orlando. And we will discuss it, because this is what is happening now. We are supposed to set aside, yes, it's a tragedy that the people have been killed and so forth. Yes. But there's something else responsible. And it ain't us. It's not the government. And we have no history. These things are so hard to comprehend, is the explanation we'll be getting all over the place. We'll be getting this explanation. They are hard to comprehend because they are not part of us. We have never been through these things before. Certainly not to the point that these things should be thoroughly familiar to us, because they've happened so often in our history. So I want to give you the example of this habit of revisionism, historical revisionism, and then a kind of denial, the underscoring of propaganda. The tragedy is that the government will not ever examine itself and ask, to what degree are we responsible for these kinds of outrageous violence? Here's President Obama.
This morning, I spoke with and Vice President Biden spoke with Mayor Joe Riley and other leaders at Charleston to express our deep sorrow over the senseless murders that took place last night. Michelle and I know several members of Emmanuel AME Church. We knew their pastor, Reverend Clementa Pinckney, who, along with 8 others, gathered in prayer and fellowship and was murdered last night. And to say our thoughts and prayers are with them and their families and their community doesn't say enough to convey the heartache and the sadness and the anger that we feel. any death of this sort is a tragedy. Any shooting involving multiple victims is a tragedy. There is something particularly heartbreaking about a death happening in a place in which we seek solace and we seek peace, in a place of worship. Mother Emmanuel is, in fact, more than a church. This is a place of worship that was founded by African Americans seeking liberty. This is a church that was burned to the ground because its worshipers worked to end slavery. When there were laws banning all black church gatherings, they conducted services in secret. When there was a nonviolent movement to bring our country closer in line with our highest ideals, some of our brightest leaders spoke and led marches from this church's steps. This is a sacred place in the history of Charleston and in the history of America. The FBI is now on the scene with local police, and more of the Bureau's best are on the way to join them. The Attorney General has announced plans for the FBI to open a hate crime investigation. We understand that the suspect is in custody, and I'll let the best of law enforcement do its work to make sure that justice is served. Until the investigation is complete, I'm necessarily constrained in terms of talking about the details of the case. But I don't need to be constrained about the emotions that tragedies like this raise. I've had to make statements like this too many times. Communities like this have had to endure tragedies like this too many times. We don't have all the facts, but we do know that, once again, innocent people were killed in part because someone who wanted to inflict harm had no trouble getting their hands on a gun. Now is the time for mourning and for healing. But let's be clear. At some point, we as a country will have to reckon with the fact that this type of mass violence does not happen in other advanced countries. It doesn't happen in other places with this kind of frequency. And it is in our power to do something about it. I say that recognizing the politics in this town foreclose a lot of those avenues right now. But it'd be wrong for us not to acknowledge it. And at some point, it's going to be important for the American people to come to grips with it. And for us to be able to shift how we think about the issue of gun violence collectively. The fact that this took place in a black church obviously also raises questions about a dark part of our history. This is not the first time that black churches have been attacked. And we know that hatred across races and faiths pose a particular threat to our democracy and our ideals. The good news is I am confident that the outpouring of unity and strength and fellowship and love across Charleston today, from all races, from all faiths, from all places of worship, indicates the degree to which those old vestiges of hatred can be overcome. That certainly was Dr. King's hope just over 50 years ago, after four little girls were killed in a bombing in a black church in Birmingham, Alabama. He said they lived meaningful lives, and they died nobly. They say to each of us, Dr. King said, black and white alike, that we must substitute courage for caution. They say to us that we must be concerned not merely with who murdered them, but about the system, the way of life, the philosophy which produced the murderers. Their death says to us that we must work passionately and unrelentingly for the realization of the American dream. And if one will hold on, he will discover that God walks with him and that God is able to lift you from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope and transform dark and desolate valleys into sunlit paths of inner peace. Reverend Pinckney and his congregation understood that spirit. Their Christian faith compelled them to reach out not just to members of their congregation or to members of their own communities, but to all in need. They opened their doors to strangers who might enter a church in search of healing or redemption. Mother Emanuel Church and its congregation have risen before from flames, from an earthquake, from other dark times, to give hope to generations of Charlestonians. And with our prayers and our love and the buoyancy of hope, it will rise again now as a place of peace. Thank you.
Okay, let's review the attitude here and the message conveyed by none other than the President of the United States. In the immediate aftermath of the killing of 9 people, as you recall, just last year, the killing of 9 people at Mother Emanuel Church in South Carolina, this was on June the 18th, almost a year ago. What did the president present to the nation? He used the word, it was a tragedy. It was a tragedy. Well, we don't disagree with that. When 9 people are killed in a church, it is a tragedy. In or outside of a church, 9 people killed at the same time. It's a tragedy, he says. But it is, in his view, a gun violence issue. That's how he framed it. It's a gun violence issue. This is what happens, he said, as the nation's top policymaker. This is what happens when someone who wants to do harm can put their hands on a gun. Gun violence is what he said happened in Mother Emanuel Church. And it is a matter that they died. The 9 people, and he includes the pastor of the church, Reverend Clementa Pinckney. He just refers to him as the pastor. We do not appreciate from the president that an elected state senator, who also was a pastor of the church, but he was an elected official at the time that he was murdered, assassinated in his church. He referred to him strictly as a pastor. So we have this as a black church thing. Some interloper, some guy who wanted to do ill and evil and was able to put his hands on a gun shows up and kills a pastor of a church. He never identifies. The pastor also was an elected state senator in the state legislature of South Carolina. So he gives us a sense that this, the context, the proper historical context here, is about the role of the black church in the struggle for freedom. And perhaps some people didn't like that, including this person full of hate. His name, of course, was Dylann Roof. This person, full of hate, was able to put his hands on a gun. But here, there is no outrage on the part of the president. As a matter of fact, he dispatched the vice president. He's reporting to the nation what the vice president told him. He understands, he says. He understands. This is the commander-in-chief. He understands that the FBI is on the scene, and he understands that the attorney general has announced plans to proceed with an investigation. But he is content, as the president of the United States informing the nation, he's content to let the best of law enforcement do its work. So this was within the context of a church, an attack on a church. But fortunately, these are good Christian people who, even in the midst of what he called the tragedy, extended the best of themselves, even to the killer, Dylann Roof, in the spirit of Martin Luther King, rather than succumb to the fatigue of despair. They summoned up their courage and their buoyancy of hope. So we have this message coming from the President of the United States, the first African-American President of the United States, who is telling us about the significance of church burnings and attacks on black churches and the role of the black church, even quoting Martin Luther King, like the four young girls who were killed in Atlanta. Martin Luther King, he said of the four girls that they had meaningful lives and they died nobly. There's no sense of outrage here. There's a sense of calm and respectability. When black people are killed, even in their own churches, your job is to contain your anger and understand that there's get into the buoyancy of hope and let the best of law enforcement do their job. And that's the President of the United States just about a year ago responding to what in the black world was considered an enormous tragedy. We discussed the funeral in which Reverend Pinckney, State Senator Pinckney, was made to be something other than an elected official assassinated by a young white man who came to the church specifically to do exactly as he did in order to start a race war. That's what he said. He was going to do, and that's what he did. So we have a very interesting role that the president played here in being the first out of the barn to let people know, yes, you have every right to be concerned and afraid. You have every right to be outraged. This is not the first time these things have happened in the history of the United States. He provides a context, but he also makes sure that he erases all the appropriate electrical charge that goes along with all of this, lest he be seen as a person actually inciting anger. So he is very calm and professorial and quasi-preacher-like. Now, let's listen to the president in the immediate aftermath of the shootings, the massacre in Orlando.
The brutal murder, a horrific massacre of dozens of innocent people. We pray for their families, who are grasping for answers with broken hearts. We stand with the people of Orlando who have endured a terrible attack on their city. Although it's still early in the investigation, we know enough to say that this was an act of terror and an act of hate. And as Americans, we are united in grief, in outrage, and in resolve to defend our people. I just finished a meeting with FBI Director Comey and my Homeland Security and National Security advisors. The FBI is on the scene and leading the investigation in partnership with local law enforcement. I've directed that the full resources of the federal government be made available for this investigation. We are still learning all the facts. This is an open investigation. We've reached no definitive judgment on the precise motivations of the killer. The FBI is appropriately investigating this as an act of terrorism, and I've directed that we must spare no effort to determine what, if any, inspiration or association this killer may have had with terrorist groups. What is clear is that he was a person filled with hatred. Over the coming days, we'll uncover why and how this happened, and we will go wherever the facts lead us. This morning I spoke with my good friend Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer, and I conveyed to him the deepest condolences of the American people. This could have been any one of our communities. So I told Mayor Dyer that whatever help he and the people of Orlando need, they are going to get it. As a country, we will be there for the people of Orlando today, tomorrow, and for all the days to come. We also express our profound gratitude to all the police and first responders who rushed to harm's way. Their courage and professionalism saved lives and kept the carnage from being even worse. It's the kind of sacrifice that our law enforcement professionals make every single day for all of us, and we can never thank them enough. This is an especially heartbreaking day for all of our friends, our fellow Americans who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. The shooter targeted a nightclub where people came together to be with friends, to dance and to sing and to live. The place where they were attacked is more than a nightclub. It is a place of solidarity and empowerment where people have come together to raise awareness, to speak their minds, and to advocate for their civil rights. So this is a sobering reminder that attacks on any American, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation, is an attack on all of us and on the fundamental values of equality and dignity that define us as a country. And no act of hate or terror will ever change who we are or the values that make us Americans. Today marks the most deadly shooting in American history. The shooter was apparently armed with a handgun and a powerful assault rifle. This massacre is therefore a further reminder of how easy it is for someone to get their hands on a weapon that lets them shoot people in a school or in a house of worship or a movie theater or in a nightclub. And we have to decide if that's the kind of country we want to be. And to actively do nothing is a decision as well. In the coming hours and days, we'll learn about the victims of this tragedy, their names, their faces, who they were, the joy that they brought to families and to friends, and the difference that they made in this world. Say a prayer for them, and say a prayer for their families. That God give them the strength to bear the unbearable, and that He give us all the strength to be there for them, and the strength and courage to change. We need to demonstrate that we are defined more as a country by the way they live their lives than by the hate of the man who took them from us. As we go together, we will draw inspiration from heroic and selfless acts, friends who helped friends, took care of each other, and saved lives. In the face of hate and violence, we will love one another. We will not give in to fear or turn against each other. Instead, we will stand united as Americans to protect our people and defend our nation and to take action against those who threaten us. May God bless the Americans we lost this morning. May comfort their families. May God continue to watch over this country that we love. Thank you.
Okay. Did you happen to notice a decisive difference between the attitude of the president just a year ago and the attitude of the president just yesterday as he announced what we ought to be thinking at a time of this kind of tragedy? He spoke and he sounded like a commander-in-chief. He didn't send the vice president. He, as a matter of fact, he used really strong action words. He has directed things. He has accounted. He has made others account to him directly as to what is going on. He has directed that all the resources that are necessary be made available in the course of this investigation. But he was very clear from the word go what this was. A brutal murder and a massacre, he said. He was quite clear about that. As he should be. And that's what it is. Brutal murder and massacre. A terrible attack. An act, he said, of terror. An act of terror created by hate. But an act of terror. He said it, and he said that the director of the FBI and of Homeland Security, with whom he had personally had a meeting, they agreed this was an act of terrorism. Well, there we are. An entirely different perspective, wouldn't you say? So we have from the president himself an entirely different disposition. He referred to the shootings, the massacre in South Carolina at Mother Emanuel Church, as a terrible tragedy. The killing in Orlando is a massacre, brutal murder, an act of terror. So how come we have this clarity, the sudden clarity, and this decisive action on the part of the president? This is exactly what we should have been seeing all along. The clarity of what's going on. And although he said nobody's making a definitive judgment, but he starts off by telling us it's a brutal murder, it's massacre, it's a massacre, it's terrorism, an act of terror. And that the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI and all other law enforcement entities concerned, though they are not jumping to any definitive judgment, he nevertheless defines exactly what it is from the word go. Further, he says, the gunman, they're proceeding with a discussion and an investigation as to whether the gunman is associated with terrorist groups. And the president vowed to go wherever the facts lead. And whatever it is needed in order to comprehensively deal with this situation, those resources will be made available. And here comes the kicker. And this is part of the cynicism in politics. All of this affirmative action, pardon that pun, he makes it clear that it has to do with the fact that so many of our friends. What is really tragic about this is that it was directed at our friends in the gay community. The nightclub, he said, he called it a place of solidarity and empowerment, and he said it was, therefore, their deaths are a sobering reminder that an attack on any American is an attack on all of us. And that is the way it ought to be. That's the way it ought to have been a year ago. But you see, this is an election year. And the gay community is a very important factor for Hillary Clinton, for whom President Obama will go stumping for votes. So there's great clarity here about what this is. This is a murder. This is a massacre. This is an act of terrorism. Decisive action. Absolutely clear about what has to be done here. And this is what's so tragic. That in the face of all of this tragedy, there's so much political grist for the mill. That on the bodies of dead people, whether they are in a church or whether they are in a nightclub, they are similarly victims of a racist system. It's some added dimensions. But the attack in South Carolina at Mother Emanuel Church is no less an act of terror than the act. And I'm not comparing. Don't get me wrong here at all. I'm not comparing them and saying, well, one is worse than the other. No. I'm saying that the president's behavior and the system's behavior have been entirely different in a non-election year and in an election year. You see? When he talked about the killing at Mother Emanuel Church in the first clip that we heard, what did the president himself say? The system, and I'm quoting now, the system, the way of life in South Carolina, and by extension, the country, produced the murders. He was very, very, very clear there. The system, the way of life, produced the murders. Here, because it's a political year, he says that these dozens, 49 people killed, he doesn't attribute it to a system. It's now, it's a case of domestic terrorism. It's terrorism. And by the way, as he routinely does, he revises history. And the media are all doing it. They're all saying the same thing. This is the greatest example of mass killings in U.S. history. Well, somebody doesn't know their U.S. history. Either that or they know it, and they all agreed to be intentionally ignorant about it. Why don't you ask the people of the First Nations people here, about terrorism and mass killings? The president's historical memory doesn't go past 2008. The media's historical memory doesn't even begin until the year 2000 and after. If somebody had even the slightest notion of looking up the history of massacres in the United States, they're too numerous to mention. And they involve hundreds of thousands and, in fact, millions of people. But that is very inconvenient. Very inconvenient to talk about. That is the history of massacres in the United States. It isn't about one lone guy who has mental problems or who has been indoctrinated in racist propaganda or who has an idea that he is, you know, the arbiter of life and death. No. We had a carefully designed, repeated acts of a system. The president said it. He said it. And he was correct. But this time in this election year, when he's expected to run around with Hillary Clinton and gain votes from the LGBTQ community, you can't be politically correct and tell America what it is that it's looking at. You have to maintain the system. You cannot implicate the system. You cannot tell the truth about the history of the United States and racism and massacres and genocidal massacres. You can't tell that story. And you can't treat all victims of massacres the same either. Because you yourself are indoctrinated. You know what your job is. You're the first black president. You cannot define in all the painful detail what happened to your own people here. You can't tell that story. You have to go on the road with the great white hope, Hillary Clinton, in a couple of days to start the process of getting her enshrined as U.S. president, the first white female U.S. president of the United States. Your devotion is to the system, not to telling the truth. We all should feel horrible about this. Not only the senseless loss of life, because we sustain this kind of damage repeatedly to our psyches. But think of all these people and their families seeing their loved ones just carted out, lifeless, on a gurney, when only a few hours ago they were full of life. Nobody wants to experience that. And you can't help but identify with the suffering, the mass suffering. But we have to be still very honest with ourselves. This is not an extraordinary event. And we should be looking for people in this political time who should be addressing this question directly. Tell me that it's about domestic terrorism. You refuse to recognize domestic terrorism all these years. Suddenly you are clear about domestic terrorism? I think you ought to be clear about the definition then. Suddenly you care about the gay community? Suddenly the director of the FBI and the Justice Department? They will do everything in their power because this now amounts to a matter of domestic terrorism? We are being played with. Suddenly, this never happened before. This kind of mass execution has never happened in the history of the United States. All the millions of people who have died, going back to the 1500s. You're going to tell us now that this is what it is. It's now terrorism. Because you've tinkered with the Patriot Act and you put in a couple of words in there to accommodate things like this and give it a new name. Therefore, it's a new thing. Well, I encourage you to keep your heads on and understand that we have been getting example after example after example of how a system works. And we're all suffering because we're all being targeted by what Terrence Trent D'Arby says is printer's ink on propaganda page. That's what it's all about. And in that respect, and I don't want to sound unduly harsh, this is why, for the system, these events, these horrific tragedies and massacres are fantastic for political gain. There's no real reason to take a systemic approach here. There's no intention of self-examination. What are our policies and how do they cause these things to happen? We don't cause these things to happen. It's these Muslim extremists. It's the Christian radical right. No, it's the system. Simply being itself. I thank you for joining me today and allowing me to just remind you to keep your brain on. What should concern us at times like this is to keep perspective. Keep perspective and don't lose focus on what the problem really is here. In the interest of political survival, our survival is way in the distance in terms of priority. But to the extent that tragedies like this serve a purpose for political gain, oh well, this is great. This is good stuff. The president becomes a commander-in-chief. He wasn't a commander-in-chief just a year ago. But now that things have heated up, he's a commander-in-chief right now. He is directing things. He's in charge. And he's clear. Last year he wasn't clear what this was. This year he's real clear about what it is. It's terrorism. You can reach me via email at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. But I encourage you today, send good thoughts out to the families of all who have been killed. Send good thoughts to them, but also keep perspective and don't fall for the propaganda at all. Keep perspective. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye. Oh my God, but he was leaving.